Thank you. I want to thank all the contributors. My chapter, I actually have for decades work on refugees and migration, but my chapter is entitled Towards South-South Peacebuilding. And my interest in peacebuilding came about through work that I did on the Burundi peace negotiations. The Burundi peace negotiations took place in 1998 and ran until 2005. And it then resulted, as in many post-conflict states in Africa, peace negotiations are followed by elections, so-called democratic elections, and then we move into what international actors call a post-conflict or stabilization space, but a space often in which there, I think Paul Richards used the term, no peace, no war, where there's a sort of low-intensity conflict going on all the time. And I wanted to write about peace primarily because in the context of the what is the promotion of what's been described in the literature as a liberal peace or a neoliberal peace, a peace which has a particular framework which has been structured around the security interest of global north states. And the liberal peace is heavily criticized in the literature. Geographers have talked about how peace has to be looked at both historically, culturally, and geographically, because it manifests itself in different ways. And there's also attention, a focus on the localization of peace, moving away from international frameworks for studying peace to looking at what happens on the ground, everyday interactions with people, or how local people conceptualize peace. So it is in that context that I wanted to look at South-South peace building. And many of you will be aware that there is a tradition in the Global South of nonviolent action, whether if we look at Mahatma Gandhi's nonviolent action movement during the 1940s, or the non-aligned movement, and their attempt to conceptualize a form of peace which affirms the humanity of people in the Global South, and that challenges the hegemonic conceptualization of peace that was being pushed during the Cold War. So I wanted to look, therefore, at what was different about the peace promoted by Southerners from that promoted by hegemonic powers in the Global North. I asked questions such as what constrained people in the Global South from taking a lead in the process in their regions, and what examples exist of South-South cooperation with regards to peacemaking. I am an Africanist, and most of my examples came in the chapter has come from research that I've been involved with in the continent of Africa, or other examples from the continent. And I mean, obviously within the African continent, there's been a debate about relating to an opposition to the paradigm of war, in which has, I suppose, has occupied African countries since the period of decolonization, whether it's the Cold War or more recent conflicts in the 1990s. We tend to see Africa, African countries as spaces where war predominates, or even low intensity violence now predominates. And many Africans, even in the African scholars and even African states, have attempted to articulate a form of peace which move away from what Galtung terms negative peace to a form of what he terms positive peace, peace associated with development sort of a more emancipatory form of politics. And so looking at looking at Africa's experience with peace making and peace building, even actually going back to the non-aligned movement, what you realize that at the same time they were articulating a progressive form of peace, they were actually amassing weapons, and in real politic terms, adopting very militaristic solutions to conflict that were taking place in the regions. So I looked at some of the peace initiatives and how, particularly regional peace initiatives, and how over time they became, even though they had distinct African characteristics, over time they became aligned or were co-opted, these initiatives were co-opted by the UN or international organizations. And many of these this co-optation occurred because of the lack of funding to push through these initiatives. So if you look at African peacekeeping initiatives, they often start off, even if they start off AU initiatives or ECOWAS initiatives, they're then later taken over and become UN peacekeeping missions. And I look at certainly at how the peace that's been promoted in some of these cases differs from that local people might have imagined. And one of the examples is, of course, the Burundi peace negotiations, which I studied. And the Burundi peace negotiations was a regional initiative. And unfortunately, it was funded by the Global North, by the European Union and some Global North countries. And it was quite a progressive initiative. But gradually, because it was of the funding, it became a sort of neoliberal peace negotiation where everybody was involved, including the World Bank and various other agencies, making it very difficult for, excluding local conceptions of peace. So the Burundi state was involved, but the local people, even though there were attempts to get them involved, were excluded from some of the debates about what a sort of post-war Burundi society could look like. So I look at Burundi, I look at ECOWAS and their role in Liberia and other conflicts in the region to try and get some sense about why African initiatives, in some sense, have failed. And then I also was interested in, obviously, there's been some debates around the ICC and whether it is possible to use the International Criminal Court of Justice. African countries have been criticizing the ICC, and the ICC is, it's argued, only targets people who have abused their power in the Global South. And I looked at, and I argue, in fact, that there are possibilities within the continent for a different imagination about how crimes against humanity are addressed. And I looked at the Hissène Habré case in Senegal and how African countries came together to try a military dictator for crimes against humanity in 2014, 2015. And I think for Africans, that was really a progressive move in terms of addressing crimes of against humanity within the continent rather than through an international organization. But I also finished by saying that despite the constraints on Africans' ability to shape a peace that is relevant for the continent, that African debates with Africa have actually contributed to global mechanisms for peace. And I looked at the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda and the debates about sexual violence there and how it led to international UN Security Council resolution on sexual violence as a crime against humanity. And also looked at the Truth and Reconciliation Commission in South Africa and how that the formation of that and Africans' attempt to promote, I suppose, restorative justice led to the development of the whole transnational justice mechanisms and studies and field that has now emerged and is being promoted globally. So I suppose I conclude by saying that despite the continued, I mean, what we see is a sort of militarization of peace within the continent. But despite that, there is the potential there for Africans to formulate, and perhaps, and not just Africa, countries in the global south, to think about peace differently. And it just needs actors, perhaps not necessarily at the level of the nation state. And I didn't look at local communities' attempt at peace. Most of the discussion really took place at the level of the nation state. Okay, thank you.